Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Strategically Prophetic Radio broadcast. I am your host, Calvin Ward, and I will be bringing you some of the best spiritually motivated discussions, interviews, and debates that you have ever heard. So what I want you to do right now is sit back, tune in, invite a friend. And remember, you're listening to the Strategically Prophetic Radio broadcast, and I am your host, Calvin D. Ward. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, guys, thanks for tuning in on this morning, and I always like to bring guests on to share information. So today we'll be talking about real estate with Ms. Denise Franco from El Paso, Texas. That's right, El Paso, Texas. So we'll be just interviewing her. If you have any questions, the number is 563-999-3721. Again, 563-999-3721. Again, thanks for listening. Share the link if you are listening to the Strategically Prophetic Radio broadcast. I'll play this track, and we will be right back and get right into the interview.
Everybody dance before you.
There's a praise
in this house.
You're listening to the Strategically Prophetic Radio Broadcast. I am your host, Calvin Ward, and I will be bringing you some of the best spiritually motivated discussions, interviews, and debates that you have ever heard. So what I want you to do right now is sit back, tune in, invite a friend. And remember, you're listening to the Strategically Prophetic Radio Broadcast, and I am your host, Calvin D. Ward. Thanks for listening.
Awesome, awesome. So thank you guys for tuning in today. And though this is a spiritual show, I like to bring guests on to share information. I am not the one that believes that spirituality is just all in the clouds. I believe there's practicality to it as well. So especially now during COVID-19, there are a lot of things people can be doing, like investing or taking their or investing in stocks, but you can also invest in real estate, right? And then, you know, people just have questions about things. I believe we should bring people information about being financially stable, life insurance, health insurance, you know, real estate, owning property, land, things like that. So it's from that perspective that we have Ms. Denise Franco with us on this morning. How are you?
Good morning, Calvin. I'm great. Thank you for having me. How are you doing today?
I am doing great. I am doing great. And thank you for being available and for coming on the show today. So, Denise, you know, we could just get right into it. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Just a little bit about Denise.
Yeah, sure. Well, you can't talk about me without talking about real estate. So I'll give you a little intro on how I got into real estate. I have a background in management. I was working at a restaurant for a really long time. I was actually working for Chuck E. Cheese for a really long time as a manager there. And as I went up in the ranks, I found myself in a position where I was able to buy a house, but I didn't know how to go about it. It was a very foreign concept to me. And so little by little, I just started doing my own research on real estate to really for myself to acquire a home. I always had the dream of investing and just didn't know how possible it was. And so in my research for myself is when I realized, you know, this is very possible, not just for me, but for a lot of people. And growing up first generation in the United States, most of my family didn't own a home. So it was very eye opening to me how possible it was. And that's really what jump started my career into real estate and deciding to get licensed. I knew that I would have a bigger platform to share this information with people. And I've been in real estate now for 7 years. I specialize in first time home buyers and investment properties. And I've even had the luck and fortune of jumping into the higher price luxury homes, which is a whole different ball game. So, I'm really enjoying it, but more than anything, you know, the idea of sharing this information is really genuinely what I aspire to do, is to share this information with as many people as possible.
Awesome. And I believe that too, because as you know, you're in El Paso. I was in El Paso recently. Now I'm in Albuquerque, but you know, I believe that 100%, you know, you can tell when you run into people, and you know the deal, you know, when you run into people and they genuinely want to share information, or you run into people that are always constantly just trying to sell you. They just
right.
want what you, they just want to get, you know, into your pocket. You said something.
Yeah.
You said something about. You said something that it was new to me. You said something about the market. I guess going into luxury houses. Is there a difference as an agent when you are selling? I guess I don't know the differences. So if you can talk a little bit about that, I'll say a regular house, or is it a price difference? So what was that difference? What were you talking about there when you said it's a whole other ball game in getting into the higher luxury homes?
Yeah, well, as a realtor, it's really, I think it's a bit more of a reflection of your experience. You know, in any purchase, this is a big deal to your client, regardless of whether it's their first home and they're purchasing for $150,000 or if it's a luxury home and they're purchasing for $500,000, it's a big purchase. And somebody that's purchasing for $500,000, $1 million, $2 million, they have probably done this before. They probably invest in real estate themselves. So the expectation is a lot higher because they're more knowledgeable about your field a lot of times than many new realtors are. So it really is a test of, you know, how experienced are you, how competent are you. You have to come well referred, and it's not something that you can just jump into from one day to the next. Like it's really something that that we have to work for as realtors.
So that takes me to my next question. So how does one go about finding a realtor? And I know, you know, I've just been in transition, you know, coming from a military career, been in transition. I just decided I was just going to wait till I retire because I'm just flip-flopping and bouncing around everywhere. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I said I was going to start one when I got here, but now it seems like I'm getting into a groove as you would, if you could say that. So I'm a little bit more comfortable now about doing that. But what does somebody look for? How does somebody find a real estate agent that is good for them, or a real estate agent that they can trust? Like what are traits? What should they be finding? What should they be looking for in a real estate agent? You know, because some people are out there just, you know, doing what they do.
Right. That's a great question. First and foremost, talk to your friends and family that have purchased. You know, a lot of times our purchase of a home is very personal, and we don't share it with the world because we've been bred to not speak about religion, politics, or money. And so when you purchase a home, it has to do with the money in your pocket, the money in your bank account. And so a lot of people don't talk about it. But if you know that a friend or a family member recently purchased a home, talk to them. And bought or sold a home, talk to them and ask them if they would refer their realtor. A lot of times that's really what's going to guide you in the right direction. That would be my first advice. Second, again, referrals. Anybody that's used a realtor before, they're going to give you in my opinion, the most truthful opinion about this person, regardless of whether it's a realtor or any other business for that matter. So you can jump on Zillow.com. It's one of the biggest platforms for home searches in general, but you can also search a realtor in your area. Now I would recommend put a little bit of time into going through and seeing who works in your area often, who specializes in what it is that you need. So if you're looking to buy a home, your needs for a realtor are actually different than if you're looking to sell a home, because it's two different needs. So you want to make sure that you reach out to a listing agent if you're selling your home. On Zillow, real clients have the opportunity to put out reviews and, you know, go through those reviews, see what you think. And last but not least, if all else fails and you come across a realtor and they want to set up an appointment with you, a consultation, to answer more your question once you're in the interview process, some things to look for are I think the basic, you know, are they showing up in time? Are they clean cut and ready for work? Ask the tough questions, the questions that nobody wants to ask. Ask those questions, you know, what if I install a new door? Is that going to add value to my home? Get their answer. You know, when they give you a price for the property, they should be justifying that price somehow. So they should be showing you other relevant homes that have sold. If they're looking to help you buy, you know, how much experience do they have? Are they giving you the rundown of what's about to happen, or are they rushing to take you to look at homes before really prepping you for that purchase?
So Denise,
a lot of this is,
I'm sorry, but what does that tell us?
No, that's fine.
And I know I cut you off, but what does that tell us? Like, you mentioned, you know, ask them, hey, mm-hmm. what if I put this door on this home? How would that affect, like if they cannot answer that correctly, or how does an individual know if they're answering the question correctly, and what does that tell us about the realtor if we ask them some of these questions you're saying, and it just looks like they're stumbling through it or they don't know? What is that saying about the realtor?
It might just mean that they're not experienced or ready for that role, you know, and not to knock any new realtors,
right,
because
right.
you have to start somewhere. But even the newest of realtors typically come with a good mentor. But if there's a realtor that's trying to sell your home and they're not really comfortable telling you what needs to be done, telling you what you don't want to hear, they're probably not the best fit, because our job as realtors, especially on the selling side, is to train and consult you to get the best, to get the absolute most back for your property. And you're going to have to put in work. You yourself that's selling the house, you're going to have to put in work. And that's something that if a realtor that doesn't have too much experience, they might sugarcoat it because they don't realize this really is a team effort. And if you don't do your part, they won't be able to hold up their part. So they might be over promising and under delivering at the end of the day. And nobody likes that.
I know that. She said, nobody likes that. I know that's right. I know that is right. And I kind of asked that question to cut you off, but you were talking about some things to look for in a real estate agent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, just, I kind of have this saying that I live by, and it's the way you do one thing is the way you do everything. So, I mean, I came from the restaurant industry where I had to hire a lot of employees very often. And I think I learned to be pretty good at the hiring process and filtering through. And I think that's a really good trait for people to practice in their life in general, because when you think about it, we're constantly interviewing people to come in and out of our life, whether it be on a personal level, on a professional level, you know. And so you really have to, first and foremost, be honest with yourself about how you're doing things, because that's a very hard pill to swallow. When I first heard that saying and I said the way you do one thing is the way you do everything, there was a lot of things that I didn't like about myself, and it was just a really big eye-opener. But it gave me the accountability within myself, and then it helped me look at other people too and say, okay, well, you know, if on the first phone call, we had set up, she didn't call me, and she rescheduled. And then there was a second reschedule, and she was supposed to come to the house. And then she showed up, and she forgot to bring the documents that she said she was going to bring, or, you know, she doesn't know the answers to the question. You know, it kind of all starts adding up. Those are the little yellow or red flags that, you know, at the end of the day, remember, you're hiring this person to complete a service for you, and you want the absolute best service, and you want to get the absolute best and most back for your investment. This is an investment, so get you the best. You know, if it just means you have to interview another person or another two people, you know, I think it's worth it.
Definitely. So going into my next question here, I have one of the gentlemen that I work with here. He does he's a general contractor. So I was able to go and look at some of the homes here. He took me around, and I was able to see some of the homes that were being built up from the ground up. So can you talk about the differences between building a home from the ground up versus buying a home that's already, you know, already ready made? If I can say that, the home that's already built up, what are the pros and cons? And why would somebody venture or choose to go one way versus the other?
Okay. So that question is actually going to be very market specific. Every market is a little bit different. So here in El Paso, if you purchase a new home versus a used home, you are going to pay the top of the market value for the new home. It's brand new. It's very similar to buying a new car. So if it's a brand new car, you're gonna buy it at top value. If it's a used home, you're more likely to get a better deal. There may be a bit more negotiating because now the home is in a different condition. It's been used. So, you know, your due diligence might be a little bit longer of a process. You might need to do a few more inspections, or you might be recommended a few more inspections. And then you'll have to, you know, go back and renegotiate with the seller, whereas a new home typically is supposed to be given to you in perfect condition, quote unquote. But as far as numbers go, that's a very market specific question, and it's different in different markets.
How about building the house? Because you said new home. I think you were just mentioning new home being a home that was newly built and someone was actually buying that home. How about just getting your home built? Any comments on just getting your home built from scratch, ground up?
Yeah. Usually with that, the pro to that is that you can be a lot more customized. So typically the way that it looks is a first-time home buyer is usually going to go with a used home just because they can get a better deal. And that first home is your starter home. On average, most people stay in their home anywhere between 5 to 10 years. I know, and this is, you know, I know a lot of people say, well, I'm going to buy my home and it's going to be my forever home. Most times we don't do that. So you have to anticipate that you're probably not going to be in your house forever. You may be the exception to the rule, but most people are not. So that's another thing that I would say. Don't get caught up on I want my dream home from the very first home that I purchased. You know, purchase within your means or under your means, actually, to be able to afford and live comfortably. You're probably not going to be there forever. And then the second home is usually when I get home buyers that now they want to build from the bottom up because they've rented now, they've owned their own home, and they understand a little bit better what they want, where they want to be, what they were missing out on that they wish they had. And so now it's more of a customization process. And the fact that they're paying a little more for it, it makes more sense because they're positioned differently, usually by that time, financially in their life, with their family. You know, they usually are married now, have kids, or have a family. So it's just a different position. That's typically the way that it goes. Of course, everybody's a little bit different. But the biggest pro is the customization, the ability to really make that home yours and add in those special qualities that you need in your house.
Awesome. Well, the Realty Group, can you talk a little bit about your business? Now, see, it's the Real Estate Agency Group. Yes. So I just jacked that all up. I was looking at the flyer here, right? I was jacking that all up. But, yeah, can you tell us, how did that come to be? Was that like was it a group of you guys? Is this something you just decided to do? Like, what was the motivation for starting the Real Estate Agency Group?
Well, so I guess what a lot of people don't know about realtors, if you're not in the industry, is we are actually self-employed. So we're self-employed, and when you start as a realtor, you actually have to hang your license beneath a broker. And the broker is basically like a senior realtor. Of course, they have a different license, and they've taken more schooling. They have to have a certain amount of years of being an agent beneath them. So that's what I say about, you know, not knocking any new realtors just because they're new doesn't mean that they can't get the job done, because they will be sitting beneath a seniored a broker, and that person is there to help them along the way. But that's just a preface to the answer. So when I started, I joined a broker And I did everything kind of on my own, you know, ran it as my own business and just kind of figuring things out by myself. And when you become a realtor, it's very much like opening up your own business. With time, a few years in, I kind of felt like I was hitting a plateau. There were certain things that I wanted to do that I really couldn't figure out how to do on my own. For example, I was really good with home buyers, but when it came to trying to list somebody's home to sell, I just couldn't grasp it. I didn't know how to get these clients. I didn't know how to keep these clients. I didn't know how to be direct with the clients because, it's just a very different process. And so I went out and I saw different brokers, and I also saw different teams and groups. And that's when I found the real estate agency. So this group is actually run by a senior realtor who's not a broker, but he's been in the game a little bit longer, and he created a small group. It's about, I want to say it's about 10 of us. The nice thing is that it's set up almost like a brokerage, but usually brokerages are a lot bigger. And so even to get your broker's attention, if there's too many agents in there, it's kind of like a, it's kind of just like a large classroom. You know, there's only so much attention that you can get if there's 200 students
in the class.
That makes sense.
Right.
So what happens is a lot of times these smaller groups are created, and now we still have that mentorship from a senior agent, but it's just a lot smaller. We collaborate a lot more. And so the nice thing is, you know, whenever you take on one of us in the team, you actually are hiring 10 for the price of one, because we push each other's listings. You know, we let each other know when we have something coming up soon. We help each other out. So like, if I were to be out of town or homesick for the weekend, I have a team to lean on to be able to help me, so the business keeps flowing and my clients aren't waiting on me. So it's a bit different, but I would say there definitely are pros to hiring somebody on a team as well, because they usually have a stronger backing behind them.
So on that note, and I'll ask this, being in El Paso, what would you say? And I think you said a little bit of it. What would you say you guys do differently? Like if I was a young real estate agent and I was like, man, I'm looking for somewhere to go. Not saying that you guys are accepting, you know what I'm saying? Not by any means trying to put that out there. Somebody said, I heard y'all accepted agents. I'm coming over. But if you had to do a comparison of a difference, you know, between what you guys do, and I think you mentioned a little bit of it as what you guys do there with the real estate agency group and how y'all operate versus maybe some other, you know, brokerages, as they say, like, what would you say those differences would be? And on that same wise, if somebody's looking for a real estate agent, so if somebody's a real estate agent and they're saying, hey, I need to get linked up with a group of people to help me out. What would be some distinguishing factors that you guys do or operate in that would separate you guys from other people, as well as if somebody's looking for a real estate agent, what are their distinguishing attributes?
Well, I would say, again, being a realtor is much like owning your own company. And so there's a lot of moving parts that go into selling a home, whether we're helping on the buying side or on the selling side, there's a lot of moving parts. So there's a bunch of different hats that we wear. You know, we have the administrative hat, we have the financial hat, we have the negotiation hat, we have the marketing hat, we have the social media marketing hat, we have the showing hat, the home value hat. I mean, there's so much that goes on behind the scenes. So first and foremost, the structure, you know, somebody that really has some structure in place, some systems in place to allow them to move a lot more fluidly through the process. obviously somebody has to understand the process first to be able to have that structure. But, you know, for somebody to have systems in place to get through it. I talked about the realtors that are on my team, but there are also administrative. We have our administrative assistants that are on the team that help us with the marketing, that help us with the paperwork. I just recently brought on a personal assistant that I'm super excited about, you know, because and she's awesome. Shout out to Anai. She might be listening right now. but yeah, I mean, it really, the structure is in place. The professionalism, I do think that that's something that sets us apart from a lot of other brokers or groups or teams. At the end of the day, you know, we're dealing with big numbers here. We're dealing with huge assets, and we're very professional. And I think that that definitely is something that you should look for when you're interviewing also. Look for somebody, not just themselves, but the group that they're with, to be a professional group.
Now, Denise,
can
you do something for me right there? Because I've been in, you know, some different circles, and some people think, I want you to define what you mean by professionalism, because some people think just because they look cute or get their hair done or got a good suit on or can dress well and they show up to work, they think that that is being professional. But now, and professionalism is a little bit more than just showing up to work, you know, and some people, you know, some people do that. And I know some people think that's what it is. So when you say professionalism in this industry, what are you talking about when you say professionalism? You should be professional. What does that mean?
I think professionalism is, it's a lot of what it's a lot of uncomfortableness. It's a lot of what people don't want to do, because there's a lot that goes into being professional that we don't want to do, but it has to get done. So yes, of course, your attire is going to play a part. You know, the way that you're groomed is going to play a part.
Mm-hmm.
The way that you speak is going to play a part. So, you know, if somebody's coming into their first interview and they're, you know, either cussing or using a lot of slang, that's not the most professional. Whether you're okay with
it
or not, you know, and if you're okay with it, we should be able to feel that off of you and then move accordingly. But just from jump, you probably shouldn't be speaking that way to a potential client, because we're in the interview process right now. But I think a lot of times it's also the uncomfortable conversations. I think that that's really what sets apart the professionals from those who are not as professional. You have to have uncomfortable conversations. You have to have uncomfortable conversations with your clients, with your peers, with your supervisors. There's certain things that happen within your workspace. If somebody's being disrespectful or you're taking it as being disrespectful, you have to have the professionalism to come to them and speak to them in a mature manner and address the issue. If you have to walk into somebody's house and tell them that they need to take all of the beautiful artwork that they paid so much for off of their walls, you need to be able to do that in a very professional manner to where you're not offending. And so that's a really good question, Calvin, because that's a hard definition to really put out there. But I think these are like the key aspects.
Right.
I think a lot
right.
of it's the communication.
Right. Because effective communication is always key. And I ask these questions because, you know, I was a healthcare administrator and worked in, you know, the healthcare, you know, industry. And so I'm huge on customer service across the board.
Mm-hmm.
I just, customer service, I'm huge on. My mentality and philosophy with customer service is, though customers,
mm-hmm.
now we all know in the service industry, we've
mm-hmm.
ever been there, customers can be wrong. We'll talk to ourselves on the inside. This person is wrong, but they are always
mm-hmm.
quote unquote right. And that's where some of that professionalism
mm-hmm.
come in. So here's my question to you. I'm going to flip it. So if somebody
mm-hmm.
is listening, what are things that clients should do to show themselves respectful to their real estate agent? What are things that clients should do to make sure they're presenting themselves as professional when they present themselves to a real estate agent? What are some things that clients should not do that can be perceived as disrespectful to the real estate agent? Now, I know that's a little different, but I'm going to reverse the question, because in service, we always say, hey, we're the one, you know, whoever the one, the individual is giving the service, this is what they should do. So if I can flip that question, if that makes sense, what are some things
that are no-go
for, you know, for people looking for a house? Because I know I've seen situations where people think because they go to someone for a service, they can just talk to them any kind of way, treat them any kind of way. And sometimes they don't, the client doesn't do their research so that they can make the process go as, you know, smooth as possible, as quick as possible, you know, with no barriers. What's up with that?
Well, so first and foremost, a client can be fired as well. That's something that I think
that
clients
good.
Should know, and new realtors
good.
Should know, because we have to have our boundaries as well. And I think, again, a lot of these concepts you can use in life. If there's somebody, a person in general, being disrespectful to you and just bringing negative energy into your life constantly and draining you, and you know this, you probably just need to omit them from your life. And a lot of times realtors have a hard time doing that because we've already invested time and energy in this person, and we would at least like to get paid. At least that's a big rookie mistake that I made often. But it's not worth it. At the end of the day, you know, you and I both know that the energy that you bring into your life, the people that you bring into your life, they're going to have a bigger impact than a little paycheck. And it's just not worth it. I will say this, realtors do get paid strictly commission only. There are some realtors that have a different type of split with their broker, but for the most part, we work based off commission. And we don't get paid until somebody has keys in their hands or a check in their hand from getting paid for their house. So we take a bet on you as a client. You know, we also have, we invest a lot into our client before we see any type of reward off of it. And so I think a few simple ways to be respectful are, you know, showing up on time. If something changes, you know, letting your realtor know that, you know, hey, we need to make arrangements and we need to change. Also, I think the phone etiquette, a lot of times we get phone calls really late at night or really early in the morning, because like you said, a lot of people have that perception of, well, they're working for me, they need to be available. And we have a life outside of this too. We do try to make ourselves available to you, but you know, 9 p.m. phone call is probably not the most appropriate. Like we're trying to be with our family at that point. I would say if you can stick to like the general working hours of 9 to 5, getting to your realtor between those hours, that's a good idea. Keep in mind, most of us do work evenings and weekends, but that's usually to accommodate you for your schedule when need be, showings, you know, after work, all of that. But most of our work can actually get done within office hours.
Okay. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Now, let's just transition a little bit to the financial part. So what are some things that a home buyer should be looking at financially when they're thinking about buying a home? And then I guess you can transition that, if you could, into what you do at the at the real estate agency group to help your clients when they are the first time home buyer coming in to buy a home.
Yeah, so as a first-time home buyer, really your best first step is to seek out the advice of a professional. You can go with either a realtor or a mortgage lender. Either one of those is going to be your first step. From there, they're pretty much going to give you the information that you need to know as far as what you need to do, what do you need to look like financially to qualify. So now with all this COVID-19 stuff going on, the qualification process has changed a little bit, but not super drastically to the point that nobody can qualify anymore. So, for example, credit scores, typically lenders are looking for a credit score of, or we're looking for a credit score of 620 or higher, and this would be your FICO. So keep in mind you have three credit scores, three different bureaus that report your scores. The score in the middle is going to be your FICO. That number used to have to be at least 620 or above. That has changed since COVID-19 to 640 and above. I know it sounds like a lot, but it's really not. This is why I say go to the professionals first. Credit, at least here, seems to be the biggest issue with first-time home buyers. It seems to be the one thing that holds first-time home buyers back from going to get information as soon as possible, because a lot of people have this thought in their mind of, well, I know I have late payments, I know I have derogatories, I know I had a collection back 5 years ago, so my credit's bad. But it's always interesting to me when I hit them with a follow-up question of, when was the last time you checked your credit? And they tell me something like 3 years ago. Well, you're going based off of outdated information that may not be true anymore, because your credit changes on a monthly basis. So if you had something in collections from 5 years ago that you know about, it's probably not affecting your score the way that you think it is today, if you've been making your payments. So credit is big, and maybe we can do another session one day just on credit alone. But, you know, credit is something that you can work on from the second that you get the idea in your head that you would like to become a homeowner. But I also recommend speak to a professional, because we can also point you in the right direction for free. So when you come to a realtor, we want to set you up to be able to purchase. So I have clients that I've been working with for a year or two strictly on credit only, and I'm not necessarily the credit expert, but depending on where you're at with your numbers, it might be a quick fix. Now, if it's something that's going to take a little bit more work, I at least will refer you over to a professional credit repair company. And the nice thing about who we refer you to is we're not going to refer you to anybody that we don't believe speaks to our business. So personally, I went through about 7-8 different credit repair companies before I found the two that I use now. There's only two credit repair companies that I would ever refer you to, and it's because I've done credit repair myself also. You know, a lot of people are ashamed of this aspect. Don't be ashamed. You know, finances is something that we don't really learn unless we go out and seek it. It's not something that we were taught in middle school, high school, which I really strongly feel we should have been,
but we weren't.
Right. So people make mistakes. It's not anything that can't be fixed, but that would be the biggest aspect that I see holds people back. You know, they're afraid to come and ask the right questions or seek out the help, and credit is something that takes a little while to repair. So the sooner you get on top of that, the better. Like I said, I have clients that need a lot of work on their credit, and I've been working with them for a year or two, and it's a long process, but if you really want it, you're going to go through it, and you're going to get there, and I think it's well worth it once you do get there.
Awesome.
That would be the biggest factor. Now, you were asking what else do they look for. They're going to look for 2 years of work history as well. 2 years of work history or schooling. So nurses, if there's any nurses listening, we can actually use the schooling that you used as part of your work history. So we get a lot of nurses that have been in the industry just a few months. But you come in with all that schooling and you can qualify as well.
Now, is that just nursing, or is that other professional area?
No, that's other professional areas as well. Nurses just tends to be the one that we see the most. But yeah, if you went to school for you know, to become a teacher, and now you're a teacher and you're just a few months in, we're going to be able to use that income from just
so
those
basket
few months.
Weaving doesn't count. If I have a degree, you know, some people have, you know, they have these degrees nowadays. I have a degree in general education, and I've been going to school all, you know, it's like that won't work. But you know what? That's neat. I've never heard that. That is, that's the first time. Not that I'm this guru, you know, I'm always a lifelong learner. But that was a good piece of information. I don't think I've ever had, even in the military, when they bring in on the military basis. I don't know if you know that. Like, you're right there in El Paso. So, like, First Light Credit Union, they do these classes with the USO. And so the USO will bring in people to speak on, I guess, as contractor / consultant on how to get a house and things like that. And they connect with some of the banks. But I never heard that. I never knew that. I did not know that. I did not know that.
I don't blame you, because I was in a few years before I realized that.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. That is good. That is absolutely good to know. Did you want to drop? Did you want to drop a line for your? Are there anybody? Is there anybody you're connected to that you want to give a shout out to or send people to if they're looking for something, or you just want them to contact you directly and you will get them in contact with whomever they need to get in contact with?
Yeah, I mean, realtors are a great source of information. You know, I've learned a lot in this process. I've learned a lot about just not only the buying and the selling process, but the investing process. I could have an entire show just on the investing process.
Awesome.
Also property, right? Also property condition. You know, I've been through so many inspections, so I understand the home condition process a little better. And, you know, there's just so much helpful information. You know, for anybody that just wants more information, that would like to maybe be set up with a consultation, whether you'd like to buy, sell, or invest, or home hack, that's, you know, if you're thinking about investing and you really don't know how to start, I would recommend home hacking. It's basically buying a home for yourself, but also doubling it as an investment property. So I can guide you through that process. The best place to find me is at on my Instagram page at denisefranco.realtor, or call me directly. My number is 915-792-1815. So I mean, whatever y'all need, don't hesitate to reach out. I'm a real person, and I would really like to help as many people as possible. So any questions you might have, even if you're not in the state of Texas, because I am licensed in Texas, I can actually refer you to somebody in your state and your city. I know realtors all around the world. And if I don't know somebody in your area, I'll help you through the interview process as well.
Okay, awesome. Well, now, I had someone text me just recently. They did text me. They said, can you ask her, how long does a derogatory remark stay in your credit? I don't know if you know the answer to that question or not, but someone wanted me to ask you that.
It depends on what type of derogatory. Do you know? Did they say?
I don't, because I read that and I wanted to, and they're listening. Let's say it's a, now, is there any such thing as a real estate derogatory remark on your credit?
Okay, so the biggest derogatories are going to be your foreclosure, your vehicle repossession, late payments, and, but yeah, those are going to be the three, collections. And it really depends on which derogatory you're talking about. They all have a different timeline when they fall off. I want to say foreclosure is 7 years. Bankruptcy also, depending on what type of bankruptcy, is going to be either 3 to 7 years. Vehicle repossession is going to be, I don't remember that one. That's a few years. I don't remember how many.
Right.
Late payments, if you're trying to buy a house, do not make any late payments. Late payments affect you so much when you're trying to buy a house. They actually stay on your credit for 2 years. After a year, they don't affect you as bad, and you could still get away with qualifying with them on there. But that's usually the derogatory that people have, is the late payments. So
okay.
Do what you need to do to not have late payments. Set up your automatic payment and just don't have any late payments.
What is the time period that someone would have to do? Now, that's an interesting question. So what is the time period, and this will be my my last question as we transition, and then you can give any last comments, but what would be a time period to kind of neutralize the effect of late payments? That you would say, like, somebody that had late payments, let's say they go to apply, and they've had late payments, let's say, within the past 2 years, and they come to you and say, well, Denise, I need to work on my credit, and then they start with you. How long will they have to have a consistent record, you know, of making payments before it turns into a positive, or it has a positive effect, you know, looking forward on their credit?
It's really hard to say because credit is very personalized to you and your profile. It's kind of like a pie, and then there's different pieces to it. And
right.
Each piece holds a different weight in your credit. So you have, how long have you had your credit for? How many positive accounts do you have? How many inquiries do you have? What type of accounts do you have? And all of these little pieces hold weight. So you actually could have a piece where you're doing really bad on your credit, like where your rating might be an F. But if the rest of your rating is an A, then these A ratings are going to pull your F up and stabilize everything. So it's very hard to say. Again, I would just recommend, if you're thinking about buying a house within the next year or two, start talking to a professional now, especially
right.
if you think you need help with your credit, because the plan is to get a plan going for you moving forward. If you wait until you think you're ready to buy and you have no idea where your credit is and you really don't know and understand how ready you are, you're going to end up having to wait longer. So as soon as you think you want to buy, come and talk to the professional. Like I said, a lot of our consultations are free. Now, if you set yourself up with a professional credit repair company, which a lot of times we will refer if we think that it's necessary, even that is well worth it, but even that's going to take time.
Right. And I have to ask this. I have to add, this is the last question that I'll ask you. I have to ask, because you mentioned the credit score in conjunction with COVID-19. Is there anything that specialized or that happened recently where real estate is concerned, the buying of houses, that industry, concerning COVID-19? Has COVID-19 changed some things in the real estate industry, or is there anything that a buyer needs to know concerning COVID-19 as to why this is a good time for them or a bad time for them to get a house or anything of that nature? I just had to ask that because I remember you mentioned COVID and the credit score.
You know what? There's a lot of misinformation. So I will say this, there has been a spark of interest about the interest rates because when the Fed rates dropped, we had an influx of buyers coming out of nowhere trying to get 0% interest rate on their home loan. That is a myth. There is no 0% home loan. if that's the only reason you're applying, that's just not right. Interest rates are still pretty reasonable. Right now they're averaging around 3.75, which is a good interest rate. There has been some buying criteria some lending criteria that has changed. So there's a lot of lenders that are no longer offering FHA loans for the time being. There's a lot of lenders that are not offering down payment assistance for the time being. However, there are still lenders that are offering FHA and down payment assistance. So there's that's also a myth. It's not that it's gone all the way across the board. You just have to find the right lender. And so that's where your realtor comes into play. You know, they should be able to link you with these resources or find somebody that's still doing it. Because I still have a lender that's doing FHA and down payment assistance programs, whereas a lot of lenders are saying these things are not being given out anymore. And again, that's a myth as well. You just have to link up with the right lender.
Well, you know what, Denise, I think we hooked up with the right real estate agent on this morning. Thank you for coming on. And, you know, if you will have us or have the show, I would love to bring you back to do,
definitely.
You know, anytime you have any information, you know, you have this platform. I definitely want to bring you back to, you know, to talk about the finances or the credit part and just put more information out to people so we can empower them. Mm-hmm. And I just want to thank
definitely.
You for taking some time out this morning to talk to us.
Thank you for having me, Calvin. I really appreciate it. I love the platform that you have, and I think that you're doing a lot of good for a lot of people, and I wish you the best of luck with this.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Be blessed and enjoy the rest of your morning.
All right. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, everybody.
You too. Bye-bye. Well, guys, you've been listening to the Strategically Prophetic Radio broadcast. Bringing you practical information as well as spiritual knowledge as well. That was Denise Franco from Realty Group. This is an awesome session. I hope you got some powerful information on today. And again, you can contact Denise on Instagram, denisefranco.realtor. Contact her on Instagram, and we'll be right back.
Today, Satan's onslaught against men has never ceased. Apostle J.L. Macklin has recognized the goal of this war against men, and in his first book entitled Manorexic Spiritual Disorder in Men, he identifies the disorder that Satan and the kingdom of darkness have injected into the spiritual lives of men all across the world. Whether it's through rejection, abuse, myriads of lust, or identity struggles, Apostle J.L. Macklin will expose and teach you how to get free by the power of the Lord Jesus Christ and His Holy Spirit. You will overcome and defeat this disorder. Your days of being manorexic are over. To purchase this book, you can find it on Amazon.com.
You've been listening to the Strategically Prophetic Radio Broadcast, where I am your host, Calvin D. Ward. Listen, I want to thank you for tuning in. Listen, find me on Facebook at Prophet Calvin D. Ward. Go to the YouTube channel, and don't forget to go to Amazon.com to buy my new book, Metaphysics and Theology, A Discussion. Y'all, don't forget to invite someone to the next broadcast. Thank you for tuning in, and until next time.